You're about to listen to a previously broadcasted interview with artist Vy Husson. This interview was broadcasted November 20th, 2025. Let's go into the interview right now, here on CKW 95.9 FM. Well, hey, folks, you're listening to CKW 95.9 FM. This is your Arts Talk radio show, and you're here with co-host Derek Breckner. And usually we have our co-host Zoe LeBrun here as well, but Zoe is still away on her artist retreat in British Columbia. Zoe's out there doing fabulous work. I can hardly wait to have Zoe return, and we get to hear about all what she ended up doing out there. So today we have one guest, and I might add a guest that was willing to come at last minute, so I want to thank them for that. Today we have with us, we have artist Vy Husson.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Vy currently has an exhibition called Land Fear, which is currently up at Ace Art. That's 206 Princess. And I believe it's up until December 19th. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So if you haven't had a chance to see Vi's work or Emmy Sparks's work, it's currently up at Ace Art. Do check it out. It's going to be up for a while yet. So, and we're getting kind of a first look into Vi's work here. But Vi kind of works with beads, or not kind of, but does, pushing kind of the unexpected territory of the work with beads. Very meticulous. I saw the exhibition. It's amazing. Meticulous beadwork, hand beading to explore fear, embodiment, and a complex emotional relationship with the land. Land Fear, the exhibition title, Land Fear, challenges the idea of that beadwork must come from a calmness or harmony, and instead embraces unsettling states as part of human experience. So, with further ado, I want to welcome Vy to our show.
Ah, thank you very much for having me.
Yeah. So, I don't know you at all, and I don't know your work until I went to the opening, and I was completely blown away. There is a level of detail and meticulousness to your work I just thought was extraordinary.
Thank you.
And I'm also thinking that the way you're kind of working with imagery with beading, and here again, I there's nothing that I can do to verbally describe the complexity and detail of your work. I'm just going to recommend that people see the show, but we're going to try and capture it via discussion.
Let's try.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, let's start off with the title. Why that title? I mean, I think I've got some ideas here in terms of some of the theories behind some of the things that I suspect that you're kind of working with, but I'd like to maybe just start with that first.
Thank you very much for asking that question, because it's a hilarious story.
Oh, good.
Are you familiar at all with the Wheel of Time book series?
I am not.
So it's this like old high fantasy, well, not old, it was released in the 80s and 90s.
Okay.
High fantasy book series that my stepfather was really obsessed with. And there was one character in the book, I think she's an evil witch. Her name is Lanfear without the D. And he named our Wi-Fi password after it, and I misheard it as Land Fear. And so that kind of combination of those two words stuck with me ever since I was like 12. And it kind of became sort of a way of describing this very specific sense of fear and unease that we have living in like an increasingly chaotic and unpredictable world, where all of these components within one system are consistently clashing and in conflict with one another.
Now, would you say that, like, are you referring to specifically, like, the human in relation to nature and land and animal? Would you say that those are all sort of in conflict?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. You know, like in my culture, I'm Métis. Mm-hmm. And in many indigenous cultures, you know, we consider ourselves totally equilateral with land, other beasts, sky, water. So the word land for me in the title and in the show and is synonymous with every every piece of this puzzle that is like the planet Earth. So it is, yes, it's humans and nature in conflict. It's humans in conflict with humans. It's humans in conflict with animals. It's everything. Yeah.
Now, I know this is maybe in some ways an overused term, but I guess in some ways you're really thinking about decolonizing the way we think about land.
Ooh, that's interesting. I hadn't really thought of that intentionally, but you know,
maybe as, that's there in a.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, like yeah. as an indigenous person, I'm constantly thinking about you know, decolonization and the yeah. way that the land is being used and misused. So I'm sure that it came through in that way.
Yeah, I'd also like to maybe talk about the beaded imagery. Mm. The imagery, you know, if we think about beading. You know, in terms of like, and I have, you know, very little historical understanding of mm-hmm. that history. I'll say that right flat out.
Okay.
You know, yeah. But I know that there are people now of Métis and Indigenous descent that are now teaching it at the university, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and I look at your work and I think, well, you're dealing with imagery that. I wouldn't, you know, and like I said, I don't know that much about the history, but mm-hmm. I wouldn't necessarily associate that type of imagery with my little tiny speck of knowledge that I know about beading.
For sure.
Can you talk about your selection of imagery?
Yeah. So the sort of traditional motifs of Métis beadwork are florals.
Right. Right.
That's kind of the iconic imagery that people think of when they think of Métis beadwork.
That's where I'm headed.
Yeah, yeah. And as yeah. you were saying in the intro, that sort of message of, you know, you want to bead when you're in a good place and when you're calm and when you're well, that comes because a lot of those pieces were created as gifts, specifically by Métis women for their husbands, for their sons, and decorations for home, of course. And when you're giving a gift to somebody that takes that much meticulous energy, you want to imbue it with as much joy and good thoughts as you possibly can. You know, there's yeah. some people say that every bead is a prayer. So if you're, you know, really in a bad yeah. place and you're stitching these things, you're creating a cursed item, really. Mm. So yeah, that's sort of the traditional kind of component of Métis beadwork. And I think that the reason why my work and other contemporary beadwork artists' work seems so kind of unpredictable is because beadwork really hasn't been seen as a legitimate fine art form
yeah.
until like maybe within the past decade.
Yeah.
So there yeah. hasn't been opportunities for experimentation.
Absolutely. I mean, as a person that comes from this sort of academic background, mm. I guess, you know, certainly beading as a course mm-hmm. didn't exist 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, so we have, you know, artists like Catherine Boyer who are changing that mm. now. I don't know if you're
oh, yeah.
familiar Absolutely. With Catherine or not, but yeah, so it's, yeah, it's a really interesting way to see what art making can be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it also, you know, sort of moves outside in terms of the traditional notion of what, as you said, like what the purpose of the original intent
mm-hmm.
of the beaded object or artwork or however you artifact or however you want to call it, and how that's all changing and evolving.
Mm-hmm. Now we're given this opportunity, this space to explore and expand, and I think yeah. Really push the medium forward, and so that's exciting.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I was very excited to have you on the show here, is that I, you know, like I said, with my sort of very small knowledge of beadwork, I thought that your show was an extraordinary expansion of what I understand and see as beading.
Thank you.
You're welcome. It's like no brainer on my part. I'm just excited to have you here. So yeah, like I think that I go into the show and I start seeing a lot of imagery that's like I said, not connected with that. Then I see a lot of text.
Mm-hmm.
I also see some interesting light boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's all part of your expansion of the medium.
Mm-hmm.
And there's even like a sculptural element in the beginning, in the middle of the room.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's all very, very fascinating. Now, I'm kind of curious about the chronology of this work that I saw that's currently up at Ace Art. Where did you begin with this work? You know, I mean, I'm assuming you've been beating for a while, and maybe there are works that aren't in the show that you also have. And I'm wondering about sort of how you were thinking about curating the show, because I think it's a very interesting and complex show in terms of this expansion of beating, I think.
Yeah, I think I've always been, ever since I began beating about 5 years ago, I've always been interested in kind of finding the parameters and seeing what you can do with it. Because in essence, although beadwork is an incredibly complicated medium that takes, you know, decades and decades to master, really you have beads, you have a needle, you've got thread, and you've got material. So trying to find as many different ways to put those together as possible or take them apart has always been really interesting to me. And when I applied for the show, I think it was almost 2 years ago now.
I had
a completely different concept. And when I was accepted, I asked Cam and Brianne at Ace Art, like, I do not want to do that. Can I completely change it? And they were very gracious to say yes. Yeah. And part of the reason why I took this direction was because I knew that I would have to spend a ridiculous amount of time on this work, and I knew that I was not going to be happy and peaceful all the time. If I was only beating when I was happy and peaceful and well, then I would never get anything done.
Yeah.
So I intentionally kind of chose a bit of a darker theme to kind of reflect the way that my life would go over the next 2 years. So yeah, I was working on it basically for about a year and a half. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's an intense amount of work. I thought it would be more than that. I mean, just there was so much work there, and it was so intricate. You know, I mean, for me, and this is probably a long shot, I think, in terms of a reference, but for me, you're almost working like they're pixels.
Mm-hmm.
And do you think about them that way at all, or...
No.
No.
I wish I did.
But you can see my reference
Absolutely.
To it. Yeah.
Yeah, with the light box pieces that you were talking about, because beads are not square, they are ovular, you can't operate thinking of them as pixels, or when you're creating a template, laying it out as pixels, otherwise it'll look incredibly shrunk. So yeah, they do resemble pixels absolutely, but I can't think of them like that, otherwise
you wouldn't have the image you've got.
Yeah.
I mean, you're basically beating like you're a photorealist.
Mm. In some works, yeah.
It's really amazing.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I'm trying to capture, I think specifically some of the works that you're thinking of are the animals.
Yeah, like this, you know, the one for your poster.
Yeah, the coyotes, yeah.
Yeah.
The muzzle grab.
Yeah. And, you know, and you've got... insects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, silt swatting. A spider eating a fly.
Yeah, it's like...
or something.
Just, yeah, they're just amazing.
Thank you.
Tell me about the one with the two eagles fighting in air.
Oh, Death Spiral. So that is depicting an eagle mating ritual by which two eagles will grasp talons in the air, in midair, and ostensibly free fall. And then at the very last moment, before they hit the ground or the water, they'll split up. And it's ostensibly, it's a trust ritual. So it's a trust fall. So I named it Death Spiral Trust Fall. Yeah. And the technique of having the florals in a slightly lighter color within the dark ones, that was a technique that I learned from my beading mentor, Janine Crouchy, who's kind of like the Michelangelo of beadwork. Like, she's whole nother level.
Big shout out.
Well, she doesn't need it. She's like a superstar, but yeah, definitely.
Is she based in Manitoba?
Yeah, based right here, Winnipeg.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so many things to talk about with this work. What about Lot's wife?
Lot's wife, yeah. So that's based on a Bible story. I was not raised religious.
Mm-hmm.
However, my grandma and my father are both very Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And I was never pressured to embrace religion, so I always was sort of interested in it purely from like a storytelling standpoint. And the story of Lot's wife is God was going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah, basically, and he told this guy, Lot, you and your family got to hightail it, otherwise you'll get caught in the fire, but don't look back. And his wife looked back, and she was turned into a pillar of salt. And I suppose sort of the Bible lesson of that is like, listen to God or whatever, but I was just so much more interested in the fact that this nameless woman looked back at the destruction of her homeland and suffered the consequence. And, you know, over the past 2 years, I've been thinking a lot about the women of Gaza, the women of Sudan, the women of Congo, even like the women of northern Manitoba. I mean, how many like dozens of thousands of people had to flee their homelands because of fire? So I was just thinking about specifically women who've had to migrate and what it would mean to look back or to be foreboding from it.
So it's interesting with that story. You know, one would need you, I think, to talk about this piece. In order to understand it, I think, in some ways. Can you talk about sort of some of the visual decisions in that piece how it kind of relates to what you've just talked about? Like, for me, I sort of see this one as kind of my traditional notion of kind of like traditional beating, except that there's a gradation happening in the background.
Yeah.
Which I also find kind of mind-blowing as well. Like, it's... Thank you. Yeah.
I set out to sort of do traditional florals because maybe it was a point of pride as a Métis artist. I was like, you know, I got to be able to master florals.
Well, I'd say you did.
But it's funny when I show like other traditional artists, they're like, that's not traditional at all. That's like ridiculous and gaudy, which I love.
Oh.
But I see beadwork as incredibly vibrant and full of life. And I wanted to use that to show the vibrancy of living on one's homeland and then the descent to death, which is
right inevitable, you know, for
salt,
all of us.
The white. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You know, I think with that piece, it's really quite interesting in terms of like, it's almost like it's bleached or something.
It was a nightmare. It was a nightmare to deal with.
But you've mastered it incredibly. It's
fabric paint.
What's that?
Fabric paint. Yeah, cheap fabric paint.
Okay.
Yeah, with like acrylic paint layered over top. I tried a million different things to get that background as white as possible, but yeah, but it looks very calcified kind of.
Yeah, but the other thing is that you're still thinking about the beating and how that relates to that transition in the gradation, you know? And it just kind of had my curiosity. I was just so... what about... let's just interrupt here for a second. So if you're just tuning in, we're talking with artist Vi Husen. Vi is an artist that's currently exhibiting at Ace Art. That's 206 Princess. The exhibition Land Fear is up until December 19th. We've been talking with Vi for approximately about 20 minutes or so. We got about 10 minutes left. And we're talking about her extraordinary beaded work. So for you, like, what's the most recent piece in the show?
Oh, the Death Spiral, the beaded eagles. Oh. I was up until 5 a.m. the night before install finishing that piece. It was ridiculous.
Well, you would never know looking at it that was the situation.
It was crazy. Yeah. It was crazy. I was beating until my fingers bled, like actively. There is blood and sweat and tears in those pieces, in the most literal sense.
Yeah. Wow. So then we go, you know, to some of the work, like the text work. Like, I think this piece, My Dead Seed.
My
Dead, My Seed, sorry. Yeah. And then, of course, you've got sort of the title kind of...
Beacon.
sort of into the whole text there. So the pieces, if we look at it through the text, and it's sort of a text where the text is kind of embedded because it's not super high in contrast with the background, which I'm sure is intentional. But it says, this land is not just a plot to bury my deed, my seed.
My dead, my seed. Yeah.
And see, this is like, I'm 60 years old. My eyes are, I'm trying to read here
that's
online.
Okay.
And
Permission to be 60, granted.
Thank you. The background, it's almost snake skin-like?
Fish skin. Salmon hide that I tanned myself in my kitchen.
Wow.
Yeah. With red rose tea. Yeah. It's actually simpler than you'd think, but it is goopy.
So talk about this piece a bit.
So I sourced the skins from a sushi restaurant within the city that I shall not name because it is technically a health and safety violation to transport like food remains or animal remains or something off the premises, but they sneakily gave me these skins. Mm-hmm. So shout out to them. They know who they are.
Yeah. Are you an avid sushi eater?
Love sushi. Yeah.
Me too.
I'd been going there for a very long time before then. Yeah. And then I went up and said, do you guys sell your skins? And they're like, why? And I said, all right. And they said, are you selling it? And I was like, probably not. They're like, okay.
So that's really great.
Yeah. $20 for like 10 salmon skins. It was amazing. Great deal.
And why the salmon skins? Why?
Well, salmon skins, because that's what they had.
Okay.
You know, fish leather tanning is really fun. It's really messy. And I did it a few years ago and I really wanted to try it again. It just creates this incredibly visceral material. It's like, it's surprisingly tough. It's waterproof. It has these insane ridges. And I knew that I wanted to use it as a backing for a piece. Combined fish skin.
I mean, not knowing all the backstory of this, it just kind of captures my eye. It's just this, there's just this unexpected kind of combination.
It's kind of Frankensteinian.
A little, yeah. But in a kind of cute kind of way, though.
Oh,
it's like, I think it's like pretty interesting.
Yeah, skins, man. Fish skins. Crazy.
So where do you think, I'm the type of artist that, you know, I kind of just kind of start making work to see where I go next.
Mm.
Some artists, you know, they have like, they've done one body of work. You've been working really hard for almost 2 years on this body of work that's currently up at Ace Art, which everybody should go check out. And now, you know, at some point you're going to start doing other work.
Mm-hmm.
So for you, do you have like ideas already cooking, or do you kind of just get started on doing stuff and then kind of the ideas come out? Or
I have ideas cooking.
Yeah.
I think of bodies of work like this sort of as narratives. You know, I'm really into film, so I'm not a filmmaker at all by any means, but I really enjoy film. So I think of them almost as narratives, and I think of these really big bodies of works as sort of like a movie, right? So my next exhibition, my next movie, my next body of work, I think is going to be something that's definitely in conversation with the previous work, whether that's a continuation or a rejection or a spiral, then something.
So it's like, maybe it's in reference to the land, but it's definitely in reference to these ideas that we were talking earlier about this kind of evening out of the playing field and sort of not seeing the human as a hierarchy, but as part of an integrated source with the land. And
I mean, I've also been thinking, you know, the last few weeks of working on the show, I began really thinking about fear as something very, very beautiful, something that's that we're really lucky to experience. You know, it's sort of the first emotion. It's incredibly primal. But also, like, I wonder if fear can exist without some form of love. If you aren't afraid to, like, if you're afraid to lose something, that means that it has incredible value to you. And I think there's an incredible beauty in the fact that, you know, even the human body uses fear as a way to protect itself, as a way to sustain itself, as a way to maintain. And so I think, you know, fear can't really exist without love. So I've been thinking about love a lot, and what function that has on us as humans.
Right.
Yeah.
So for me, when you start talking about it this way, I start thinking about, like, discomfort and how one maybe could potentially grow from discomfort. Do you sort of see related to that at all, or am I kind of going too far out on a limb here?
Discomfort. I wonder. I mean, I definitely, you know, my anxieties and my fears over the past few weeks, specifically regarding the show, I've come to really cherish them and see them as very special, and think of how lucky I am to be in a position where I fear something that's so beautiful.
Right.
And of course that extends to our relationships, to the land, to animals, to ourselves. So I'm not sure if it's a way to dodge discomfort, but I think it's a way of understanding it.
No, I wasn't thinking about dodging it, but I think it's definitely, I think it's definitely another way to understand things. I think for sure. Which
how
is,
beautiful that
yeah,
we get to,
yeah, yeah.
I that think, we get to live in fear.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. So we're going to wrap things up in a couple minutes, but any last words? Like, we, you know, I feel like we just kind of scratched the surface with you. And any sort of other point that you'd like us to kind of talk about before we wrap things up?
Good question. Well, we do, if you want to get more into land fear, there, me.
Oh, yeah, Artist Talk.
Artist Talk, yeah. Yes. Well, so me and the curator for the show, Julia Lefrenier, who's absolutely amazing, genius. We'll be chatting at Ace Art on December 13th. That's a Saturday. It's like 6 days before the close.
Yep.
So come on by if you want to talk more about land fear.
Yeah. Great. Is there a time for that yet? Do we know?
2 p.m.
2 p.m. 2 p.m.
Yeah, at Ace Art.
Okay. So that's 206, Ace, 206 Princess at Ace Art. December, what was the date?
13th.
Again? 13th.
Saturday, free parking.
That's right. 6 days before the show closes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, listen, thank you very much for the interview, and thank you for doing the